live in volatile, uncertain and complex times. So how do we navigate an age of uncertainty and complexity in global development? In this series, we explore the future of PARTOLS, the Dutch Development Cooperation Association that brings together nearly 110 Dutch development NGOs. The podcast series is produced by Disrupt Development, the world's first post-growth innovation academy in global development. My name is Alexander Medic, the founder and innovation strategist at Disrupt Development. In this episode, we talk with Charles Kojo van Dijk about the localization agenda. We discuss the current state of global development, the changing role of INGOs, the collective responsibilities from actors in the global north and the global south, and Charles shares some very practical suggestions on how you can accelerate the localization agenda. Charles Kojo van Dijk has 14 years experience working within a civil society sector in the global south. Charles is a social justice activist and thought leader with experience in strengthening civil society resilience, sustainability and Southern leadership. Charles currently serves as the head of the Capacity Development Unit at the West Africa Civil Society Institute, WACSI. He is a member of the Reimagining INGO Social Lab, the Ringo Core Team, and is an advisory board member of Disrupt Development. Welcome, Charles van Dijk, to the PARTOLS Future Exploration. I'm very excited to have you on this podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the invitation, Alexander. Happy to be here.
Great, welcome. So, Charles, the call to change the balance of power in global development is getting louder and louder. It is time for more local ownership of the global agenda. Everyone seems to agree, right? Over the years, there have been many laudable efforts by CSOs to change grant-making systems, governance structures, decision-making mechanisms, all in order to facilitate local ownership. So before we're going to discuss the future uncertainties that the various civil society members have identified, what is, according to you, the current state of global development?
Thanks so much, Alexander. That's a very interesting question. Looking at things from a global perspective, we can see that there's a growing impetus, but also a growing appetite for doing development differently. We can see that over the past 2 years or so, there have been various advocates and activists who have documented several reasons for this impetus or for this appetite. Some have pointed to, you know, the uncertainties that the COVID-19 pandemic has presented. And these uncertainties have been very real to all of us and have been very vivid in our lives. Others have also pointed to movements such as Black Lives Matter, Shift the Power movement, community-led development movements, the localization kind of agenda or movement, which is usually been driven by Global South humanitarian actors and organizations. So all these things are now shaping the way development is being discussed and the proposals for doing development differently. But I personally believe that there's now a strong kind of agreement or some sort of consensus of meeting of the minds of the need to confront the ways in which Europe and America's colonial past shapes the present inequality and poverty situation that we can see globally. So therefore we've seen like several platforms within the social justice, environmental and humanitarian space that are exploring issues of colonialism and its enduring legacy, both on global poverty, on racial issues, and also on power in terms of power dynamics. So currently, the way it looks, if you look at the state of global development, it's become apparent that it is really time to consider and implement alternatives. Right. But the question that everybody asks is, where do we start from? Right. But I am encouraged by bold and empowering initiatives like the localization agenda, spearheaded by colleagues like from the NEAR Network, the Shift the Power movement, the Reimagining INGOs initiative, in which I am playing an integral part. And so basically, that's how I will summarize the state of global development.
Very comprehensive summarization, Charles. Thank you very much. And you touched upon a lot of interesting elements that we are going to discuss in more detail. Before we're going to discuss these elements in more detail, Charles, you are a very passionate and active development professional, working in a variety of roles on the Sustainable Development Goals. So, related to the decolonization agenda, how are you working currently on localizing development aid?
Yeah, so I mean, within the space, I find myself working in an institution like the West Africa Civil Society that is more of a sector specialist, that we're looking at the ecosystem. There are various ways in which I've been working with colleagues. A lot of the things we've been doing is to bring some sort of attention to the issues through experience sharing, usually through thought leadership conversations, thought leadership also in terms of writing op-eds, issue papers, et cetera. But we've also been doing a lot of studies, research studies and documentation. We've been doing a lot of convening and connecting around these issues. And then also doing what I call experimentation and exploration, right? So just to give examples, so examples of thought leadership, some of the speaking engagements that we've been involved in on various platforms recently, well, I won't say recently, but 4 months or so ago, we were invited to speak to the UK Parliament. You know, they were having a parliamentary inquiry, and I thought that was a really great platform to put our case forward for doing development differently.
So what did you put forward?
So we put the case forward, making suggestions on how aid can be structured differently, how there needs to be more a focus on strengthening the ability of communities to lead their own development process, how programs and projects should be more long-term, funding should be more flexible, and how money should actually find its way to grassroots organizations that are making a change in various communities.
Was it positively received?
Yes, it was positively received. I believe it was something that was really embraced in terms of the ideas, but there was also the recognition that there are certain bottlenecks and challenges just in terms of how foreign policy is framed. And you know, and also how to navigate political interests in getting some of these reforms done. I think that was very candidly spoken about, but generally it was received. And I believe it's actually starting to make certain changes in that space. So yes, and so we've also been invited to talk to national NGO networks in Europe, you know, the networks in Portugal, the networks in Ireland, the networks in UK, and they were very much interested in, yes, aid reform, but also solving leadership and localization. And they've also been very much interested in our views on community-led approaches, community philanthropy, alternative resourcing, and, you know, just resource diversification. So we've done a lot of work in terms of thought leadership. We've also done some significant work, as I mentioned, on research and documentation. Just to give a typical example, recently we're just about to launch a report that we worked with Star Ghana, the Global Fund for Community Foundations, and the NEAR Network. It's on the localization agenda and shift the power, and also African philanthropic models, where we focused on Burkina Faso, Ghana, and Nigeria. And we focused on capturing specific indigenous philanthropic models that are being used successfully in those countries. And I think this is going to be an interesting publication when it comes out, to shape the way communities can organize and also mobilize resources, you know, for their own development. That's some of the work we are doing. We do a lot of convening and connecting. We had a localization agenda conversation that was very popular. We had a local resourcing community of practice conversation. We had several COVID-19 series that we've been doing. And then, of course, within the experimentation space, you know a lot about the Ringo, Reimagining INGOs, the social lab that's going on right now. So these are some of the work we've been doing.
It's amazing. You're doing a lot of very important activities. And it seems that we do have a truly an expert on board on this particular topic. Thanks for sharing those insights on your experiences, Charles. So let's dive a little bit more into the content. In a series of workshops, the Dutch civil society organizations, they have come up with future uncertainties that might impact their work. Decolonization and localization were one of the most important themes, if not the most important theme. Let's analyze a few of the future uncertainties that these civil society organizations have identified. The first future uncertainty relates to the existential crisis the international NGOs are currently in. In particular, the changing role of Dutch NGOs in relation to the shifts in, for example, that more funding is going directly to local organizations, accountability not only towards donors, but also towards the communities, more decision-making power is being decentralized and is flowing to local organizations. So there are quite some challenges that the Dutch NGOs are currently going through. So Charles, you're one of the drivers also, like you earlier shared, behind the Global Ringo initiatives that seeks to transform the role of NGOs and INGOs, global civil society. What is your take on this future uncertainty that these organizations have identified?
This is a very, very good question. So I sincerely empathize, honestly, and deeply with the fears and concerns being expressed by INGOs and colleagues within INGOs as regards the current shift that is being proposed. Mm-hmm. You see, the thing about change is that it brings into sharp focus certain uncomfortable realities. But I believe that in the midst of all these uncertainties, we should always look for the opportunities. And my encouragement to colleagues within INGOs is to focus on what opportunities does this bring, right? Because I think there's a lot of opportunities. But I also want to emphasize that both Global South and North have a challenge to shift mindsets and ways of working. So when we are saying shifting power, it also involves shifting mindsets. And the mindset shift should not only happen in the Global North, but also in the Global South. And why am I saying this? So we did a research survey that was conducted as part of Ringo, mm-hmm. when we started the process, where we captured Southern voices and perspectives highlighted. That was essential in terms of issues around how INGOs should engage with Southern organizations. Mm-hmm. Most Southern organizations said that INGOs should recast themselves as co-implementers, mm-hmm. right? But then the question now is, what does that really mean practically, right?
And that's the question. What do you think?
Yes, it's a tough question, but I think it means, you know, how INGOs can really alter their culture and functions from direct implementation practice to more empowering roles. For example, how can they play a more facilitation role, a mm-hmm. more connecting role, a more convening role? How can they play a more bridging role or brokerage role? How can they do more strategic capacity development, strengthening the ecosystem, right? Strengthening the vehicles that are doing this work. How can they provide spaces for learning and reflection? So really forming different types of communities of practice. I think these are the different types of roles that INGOs can consider doing. But the challenge is to shift the current paradigm, mm-hmm. right? You know, because the current paradigm, actually, if we're being honest with ourselves, is mostly a funding relationship.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah. So how do we move from a funding relationship to a more nurturing and mutually respectful partnership? And that's mm-hmm. the challenge, right? But I think that it will be strategic for INGOs to embrace this shifting trend, because I always tell people that there's actually a quiet revolution happening, or evolution. Maybe revolution is a bit of a strong word.
Yeah.
Evolution. And I feel like INGOs need to position themselves and prepare themselves adequately to continue to play a significant role in the Global South communities. And why do I say this? From that same research survey, the Global South organization said they still want to work intimately with Global North organizations, right? Mm-hmm. But they want a more mutually respectful relationship and partnership. But they value what INGOs bring on board. Yeah. They just want a change in the approach, and they want to be given more responsibility and leadership. Right. But then there's a challenge for us Southern leaders, right? For those of us in the South, is to also exhibit capacity and capability to lead from the front.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And then also avoid the trap, I call it the trap, of being gatekeepers that we are complaining about within that development process,
mm-hmm.
especially when we are engaging with smaller grassroots organizations.
Yeah, right. Thanks.
So this is a challenge.
Yeah, let's move on to the next future uncertainty, which very much relates to the points you just shared, Charles, which is about neocolonialism and structural racism within global development. Many current practices and attitudes in the aid system mirror and are derived from the colonial era, right? So there are many examples. For example, the phrase capacity building was cited as one of the examples that suggests that local communities and organizations lack skills, while other terms such as field expert perpetuate images of the global South as uncivilized. As development professionals, I think that we all have a collective responsibility to decolonize aid. But where do we start?
Yeah, great question. So I think, first of all, I think that this is a global civil society responsibility.
Mm.
This is a challenge that both global North and South actors need to accept in terms of responsibility and work together to overcome.
Yeah.
But you see, due to the historical antecedents and the complexity of the international development system, which we can basically describe as an industrial complex, right? I think there's a need for more of a multidimensional approach, right? So currently, I describe the system as supply-led and demand-fed, right? So the question is, where do we start? So I'll divide the kind of look at it from a supply side and demand side. So on the supply side, you know, where our colleagues on the Global North mostly are, because this is where the resources are now coming from, right? How do we shift that mindset from a typical charity mindset to a co-investment kind of mindset, to see that as you're coming into our space, you're coming to, you see it as more of a co-investment kind of relationship,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's an issue of mindset shift. How do we overcome the savior complex, right? How do we overcome decades and years of power asymmetry, right? And then there's also the issue of the aid structure and systems. How do we reform the aid structure? So the funding channels, the time horizon of grants, the grant requirements, the reporting requirements, because a lot of grassroots organizations who are actually doing a lot of the great work, and actually this is where we stand a chance of really reducing poverty and inequality,
mm-hmm.
they feel that they are eliminated by complexity, right? Because they just can't access this funding directly. And then they have to always go through, you know, gatekeepers or much more urban-based organizations that have the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Right. And so how do we change this aid structure and system so that money actually gets to the organizations that communities that need it?
Mm-hmm.
And then we need to look at international cooperation approaches. So is direct implementation the best approach? Has it worked? If it has not worked, is it time to consider other approaches, right? So NGOs need to think through this. They need to think about how do they measure success? How has success been measured? Has it been measured in the eyes of communities or in the eyes of the donors,
mm-hmm.
right? How are partnerships being built? Is it really partnerships that are being built or their funding relationships? So how do we move from typical funding relationships to empowering and nurturing partnerships?
Yeah.
So that's something on the supply side.
That's the supply side. And the demand side?
On the demand side, where people hardly talk about, which is, I think, is also important, is that there also needs to be a shift of a mindset of communities in where we are from. We're supposed to work with our communities to make citizens more active and more engaged. What has development has created a lot of passive, dependent kind of recipients, right? How do we get citizens to see that they also have power? They have assets and they should be at the forefront of their own development. So there needs to be a mindset shift. How do we shift mindsets for citizens to realize that they can mobilize resources, from their own domestic constituencies? And that when we say donor, it's not necessarily a white lady or white guy from Europe, that you also can be a donor.
Yeah.
Right. And how do we shift those mindsets? How do we also document? Because we are talking about alternatives. But are we documenting alternative approaches? Are we documenting indigenous approaches or community-led development approaches? Are we documenting various philanthropic models? Are we documenting how we can do localization? Because for people to embrace a change, they need to see evidence that the alternative is better or the alternative will make a greater impact.
Yeah. So let's zoom in a little bit on the supply and the demand side. So the role of donors has also been extensively mentioned by the various civil society organizations. Money talks, right? And donors have the power to reinforce existing harmful systems, but they also have the power to create transformational change that we are all seeking for. For example, the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs encourages now their grantees to work actively on shifting the power to local communities. It's a decision, conscious decision that was made. So from your perspective, what should the big donors in global development do differently?
Yes, I think one of the things that the donors can do differently is providing more flexible long-term funding to stay away from short-term ad hoc funding. I think also funding administrative costs will be very important. When I talk about long-term flexible funding, I'm looking at 3 to 5 years horizon. And I think it's important to support organizations this way. And when I say flexible funding, it means organizations play a role in terms of their ability to design from conception what the various initiatives they're going to implement. So, you know, a co-creation in the true sense of the word, that would be extremely helpful. I think an investment in the sustainability of organizations and just the general ecosystem within the global South. And when I talk about sustainability, I'm going beyond financial sustainability to look at issues that actually affect the financial or actually make resourcing easier. So
Such as
relevance and legitimacy. So issues of identity, issues of trust. You know, how do organizations build trust with communities? Those are more potent issues. And then operational issues, governance and leadership, accountability mechanisms. And then, of course, how you design your programs. How do you build ownership for your program? So I believe that if your identity is strong, if your operations are strong and your intervention is strong, the finance will definitely find you, right? And I think that is the kind of support that donors should be looking at, this kind of sustainability support. The idea is to how do we help organizations to diversify their resources? And then how do we empower them to adopt alternative resourcing opportunities? And mechanisms. That would be a great area. Another area is in the program design. So usually when we are designing programs, there's a lot of focus on money. So money is thrown at a program and money is seen as the only asset. And I believe that it's about time that programs, when they are designed and configured, we are able to analyze other types of assets beyond financial resources. So what are the communities and organizations bringing? They also need to contribute because remember, it's a co-investment relationship. So let's value the social capital that they bring. Let's value their expertise. Let's value their networks. Let's value their reputational capital, their trust, and any other kind of non-cash assets that they have as part of the program, as part of their contributions. Another thing I've seen is that, especially with the COVID, technology is very important. And we can't do without technology. And many organizations need technology to be more effective. So I think that's another area donors can support, you know, with software, access to software, and even to a large extent, hardware for, you know, so, and also getting organizations to adopt the use of technology to strengthen their own operations, to strengthen advocacy, to build evidence, to, you know, to have better data, et cetera. That would be another area. And then, of course, you know, I think there should be more investment in the enabling environment for civil society. So, you know, Change the Game Academy, like Giving for Change, initiatives like Disrupt Development, initiatives like Shift the Power Movement, the Ringo Process. I mean, these are very interesting, experimental, but very, what I say, forward-looking kind of initiatives that I feel donors should invest and support, right? Because many of these initiatives will help in terms of opening up civic space, in terms of shaping the future effectiveness of civil society, right? And then also investing, I believe, in community-led development, you know, documentation on that, and community philanthropy. You know, they're helping to build a local giving infrastructure. I mean, these are some of the things I think donors can work on.
So that's quite some work to do for the donors. So that was the supply side. And finally, let's zoom into the demand side that you have been talking about already quite extensively. Yeah. And it is a perspective that I do not hear often about in all the workshops, the webinars, the social labs I took part in, nor all the books, guides, articles I've been reading. You know, when we talk about shifting the power, we always, almost always, talk about how we need to change the organizations from the global north. It's very much focused on one side of the coin, where we are all having a collective responsibility, like we earlier discussed. Looking at the civil society organizations in the global south, what responsibility do they have in this matter? You already mentioned a few, but let's zoom into the most important responsibility you think they have in this matter.
Yeah, I think the number one responsibility is connecting, building trust with communities and helping communities to shift their mindset from this idea that they are passive recipients to become more active citizens in the development process. That's the number one responsibility that we have. The second responsibility is on issues of resilience and sustainability. We need to really support our organizations, emphasize on the need to plan for sustainability from the word go, to look at the full operations of our organization, not just projects, but to look at sustainability from an organizational perspective, to work with communities to support the sustainability of the work that we are doing, to really build resilience in times of difficulties. And that is something that we on the demand side need to work a lot more on, really show that we have stronger organizations, accountable, transparent, and we are effective. And then another thing is about resourcing. And the thing about resourcing is that I think we need to strengthen our ability to mobilize resources from our own domestic constituencies. There's a lot of potential within our own spaces. What we've seen is that in our own spaces, there's a lot of giving, even though it's informal. We also seen during COVID that we give to humanitarian causes, but we need to now cultivate a culture of giving for social justice and also for environmental and other development kind of causes. And I think this is a responsibility for those of us in the global south to nurture this kind of culture, to support an enabling environment for these things to happen within the global south. So for me, those are the three most important things I think that needs to be done.
Very interesting. Thank you for sharing those insights. I think it also shows that we have a very collective responsibility to play in changing the landscape of global development. Well, I would like to thank you very much, Charles, for the conversation today. It was very interesting to hear more about your learnings, your perspectives, and also to feel your drive and your passion.
Thank you, Alexander. Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Would you like to learn more about the Parktal's future exploration and explore how you can be involved? Check out the link in the description for more information. Are you interested in engaging in thought-provoking conversations with fellow development professionals? Then make sure to join the Disrupt Development Talk to Walk sessions every Friday, 1 p.m. Central European Standard Time. Thank you for listening to the podcast channel of Disrupt Development, the world's first post-growth innovation academy in global development. We work with leaders, nonprofits, social enterprises, corporates, international institutions, and governments to help them innovate, maximize impact, and achieve systems change.